And yeah, she's
good morning. We're going to open the House Committee on General Government Consumer Protection Thursday, February the 17th, 2011. Friends, we're going to do some jumping around to accommodate some legislators who are trying to get all their bills in and do some things today. So we're going to first open a work session on House Bill 2550. Public hearing. Public hearing on 2550. Representative Barnhart, Representative Nolan, please. Please remember, as legislators, we're supposed to set the example of identifying yourself properly and concise, important information for binding us.
Mr. Co-Chair, Co-Chair Holvey, members of the committee, I'm Mary Nolan. I represent House District 36 and delighted to join my colleague from Eugene. I am here to talk about House Bill 2550 and House Bill 2552, although there are people from agencies who can give you much more information about the mechanics of how these bills might work, if you would pass them along. My purpose here is simply to give you a framework for why these bills were brought to the House and why you have the opportunity to look at them. Both of these bills are aimed at making sure that our agencies have the opportunity to come into the 21st century and use the tools that are available now, electronically and otherwise, to fulfill their mission. The bills are about efficiency, accountability, and transparency in the way, particularly, the Department of Revenue operates. Equity is also an important guiding principle for me and the interest that I had in working with both the chair of the Revenue Committee and the people at the Department of Revenue in providing these. We want to make sure that people have trust and reliance in the way that the tax laws of the state are implemented, and by having fairness and equity across all of those implementations and transparency, I think we can go further to assure that that's the case. I would be happy to answer questions, but I'll defer to the good chair of the Revenue Committee.
Thank you, Representative Nolan. Go ahead. We'll see questions after.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from House District 11, Central Lynn and Lynn Counties. Representative Nolan, I think, has described the overall arching goals pretty well. I will say that these bills, 2550 and 2552, are part of the long-term planning that the Revenue Committee has been working on to increase compliance in the collection of Oregon's taxes. What we've discovered is that as we put systems in place to allow us to collect additional revenues, these have a number of very salutary effects. First, we have more money for the general fund. Second, people who regularly pay their taxes and do so voluntarily can have an expectation that that others are also paying their taxes and will be required to do so. This particular bill, 2550, is designed to allow the department to receive funds that are actually located in other places in the United States, where there may have been an overpayment of some kind, in other states, in a variety of agencies, and it allows them to make agreements to share information in accordance with the confidentiality rules that all of the revenue departments in the United States follow for the purpose of collecting tax debts owed to the state of Oregon. I'm going to leave details to those from other places to talk about that, but that's the essence of this particular bill. I think you may have several others in addition to 2552 and 2550, but that's enough for now, I think.
Thank you, Representative. Committee members, do you have any questions for these two colleagues? And they'll be staying to introduce the next bill, too, but if you have any questions on this one.
Just one real brief question, Representative Barnhart. You're the co-chair of the Committee on Revenue, and these were introduced pre-session by that committee as well. These have subsequent referrals. I don't believe they have fiscal or revenue impact statements yet, but is it your intention that if this committee were to pass these, that you would work these over in the revenue committee?
Yes. I think my hope is that this committee will decide whether these appear to be viable concepts, and if the committee thinks they are, that they'd send them along to us.
So are you, follow up?
Yes, sir.
So are you aware of any amendments that are needed to these bills?
Not today, I'm not.
Okay, thank you.
After the hearing, I may have a different opinion.
Thank you.
Thank you. And may I make another statement? You said I'd be available. The fact is I'm supposed to be chairing the Committee on Revenue right now. So as soon as I'm done here, I'm going over there to
what we're going to do is
necessary business, and then I'll be back.
No, we'll go ahead and close it now, because Representative Nolan, too. So we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2550, and we're going to open a public hearing on 2552. Representative Nolan, you want to speak on 20? You're not speaking on that one. That was only the
No, thank you. That one I am not as familiar with. I'm
okay.
Sure the astute chair of the House Revenue Committee can explain
okay.
that.
Thank you.
As well as there's another state representative who's the co-sponsor here.
Yes.
So we'll switch chairs.
Okay, thank you.
2552 is the other bill I was referring to this morning that deals with the issue of public contracting and the requirement under the bill that those who offer themselves as contracting companies or agents for public contracting are able to demonstrate, as the bill sets out, that they've actually paid all of the taxes that are due. I don't think I need to say a lot more about it, because the issues that apply to 2550 apply to this bill as well. I think this bill may have more difficulty in terms of the cost for the department and perhaps some other issues that need to be addressed, but I'm going to leave that to the department to address those in more specifics.
Okay, any questions for Representative Barnhart on this bill? Okay, what we're going to do is close the work, the public hearing on House Bill 2552, and you can stay for your next bill. So I'm going to close the public hearing on 2552. She didn't want to speak on that one.
No.
Okay,
and we're going to. Representative Barnhart wants to.
Yeah.
We'll get to the other bill.
On 25, yeah.
I think he wishes.
You want to go ahead and do 28, 25 for your now?
I brought the files for the two I was told we were going to do now.
Okay.
The other file is sitting on the podium in the other committee room, and I don't have it with me.
Okay.
Just it from memory.
Okay. Would you go ahead and get that, and I'll start with Representative Thatcher so we can get this one on the board, back on the schedule. I appreciate it, Representative.
I think I'll go without it.
Okay. Okay. We're going to open a public hearing on 2825. Representative Thatcher, you want to help? Maybe then I'll help Representative Barnhart remember what's on his file. So.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Phil Barnhart, State Representative from House District 11. The bill that's in front of you is a transparency bill, the purpose of which is to allow for the posting on the Internet of information as specified in the bill about the transactions involving tax credits and subsidies of businesses in Oregon. Now, there's some specific details in the bill that, of course, needed to be changed. There has been an amendment presented, I think it's a -2 amendment, if I remember correctly, that I think deals with some of the concerns of Oregon business, and I hope they're here to talk. I didn't notice who's in the room when I came in. I was in a rush, but we would commend this bill to your attention. This bill, along with some other bills that are coming on the transparency issue, is something that in the area that Representative Thatcher has been working on as a member of the Transparency Commission, and that we've been working on together as members of the Portals Commission. The purpose of which is to set up a viable Oregon State website. The possibilities are exciting, and the possibilities for improving communications between the organs of the state agencies, the state legislature, and others, and the public, I think, are enormous. The chances of actually making the kinds of changes we need to make in order for ordinary citizens to both understand what we're doing, to be able to be informed about it, and to be able to criticize the things that they have concerns about are enormous. This bill is one of the pieces in the long-term plan that I think is going to take a number of years to flesh out in order to accomplish all of that.
Okay, thank you, Representative Thatcher. You want to?
Thank you. For the record, I'm Kim Thatcher. I'm from Kaiser. I represent Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh. And Representative Barnhart mentioned the transparency website, which gives us a good start on showing taxpayers and others information about state agency budgets, where the revenue comes from, even some salary information on state workers. But I'd say this bill takes the transparency website to the next level, and I'll tell you that being on Ways and Means has given me a new appreciation for the state budget and all the billions and the various and sundry programs that we spend money on, and especially as a member of the Human Services Subcommittee and dealing with funding decisions that have to do with very needy people. Last session, I served on the House Sustainability and Economic Development Committee, and the reason I mention that is because I thought it was... Okay, we actually heard a lot of the bills that have to do with the tax credits that we're talking about today that we want transparency on. And it was difficult to be sitting in that committee and hearing people come in with their business attire and tell you they need X number of millions of dollars for a green energy project or whatnot, or film project, whatever. And when you know next door there's low-income Oregonians just wanting a hand up. And that was kind of difficult. I also have a unique perspective to add to this bill, since I am also a business owner, and I'm aware that we're in a recession and it's difficult, and we want to encourage business. And I know that government incentives can pay off for some folks. But I also believe that the taxpayers need to know, since they're kind of footing this, subsidizing it in a way, They need to know where their money's going and if it's being targeted effectively. This legislation, I think, can also help state and local decision makers target these tax incentives in the most beneficial way. A couple weeks ago, a tax expenditure report came out, big thick old book. It showed Oregon spending around $12 billion. Got to get my consonants right, $12 billion in various tax breaks, just about the same amount we're spending on the current state budget, interestingly. Now, of course, not all these tax deductions and credits are for economic development, but many are. And to me, it just makes sense to list these projects and get the tax expenditures on the tax or on the transparency website so they can get the same level of scrutiny as the other state expenditures. And let's face it, the state government, through these tax credits, is it taking the power to pick winners and losers in our economy, and we need to be careful. It takes money provided by one group of taxpayers and gives it to another. A recent editorial in the Albany Democrat Herald, I thought, pretty well. It says, it never seems quite fair that somebody who has been employing a steady number of people in Oregon for 50 years pays taxes just like he's a nobody. But a newcomer promising investments can qualify for a break, even though he might compete with established employers. With that, I thank you for hearing this bill today.
Thank you both for bringing it forth. Committee members, do you have questions? No questions.
Mr. Chair, may I simply note that when House O'Herring from the Democrat Herald and I agree, that probably means there's a pretty broad spectrum of agreement.
Well, and I appreciate the agreement between you and Representative Thatcher to bring forth this bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Please don't pass a lot of taxes, Representative Barnhart. Okay. We have some other people signed up. Let's bring up Mr. Bartholomew. Please identify yourself.
Hi. Mr. Co-Chair, for the record, my name is John Bartholomew. I am a policy advocate for the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, OSPIRG. We're a statewide consumer advocate group. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2825, the bill to improve transparency and accountability of economic development tax incentives. We support this proposal because there is a need to ensure that our economic development programs work as well as they possibly can, and this bill provides a simple way to increase the accountability of these important programs. Now, we believe that economic development programs are a critical tool to improve the economic health of Oregon. These programs can help ensure that Oregon's economic stability and sustainability will go on in the future, will be improved in the future, as long as they're administered effectively. Oregon taxpayers spent at least $350 million in the last biennium, and based on the new tax expenditure report, it might be up to $600 million in this upcoming biennium on these particular economic development programs that the bill cites. Unfortunately, the public has no way of knowing, virtually no way of knowing, who is getting these economic development incentives, what kind of value they're getting back on their investment. Oregon taxpayers ought to have a clearer picture, especially in a time of limited resources and high unemployment. This bill would provide the public this clearer picture. It will require the names of companies receiving the incentives, how much they receive, what deliverables were promised, for example, how many jobs they said they would create and how many jobs they actually created. And many businesses who utilize these programs support the increased transparency. You should have a letter in front of you signed by a number of businesses that have used Enterprise Zones, e-commerce Enterprise Zone program, and the Betsy Credit, who all agree that transparency is needed on these programs, and that it's important to ensure that the programs are effective and to build the public trust back in these programs. Transparency will help expose problems that exist in these programs sooner if problems exist. I mean, you all remember last year when the Betsy program, the whole Mesilla trucking issue came up, where you had a company based in Texas that received $4.5 million in Betsy credits, even though they had minimal operations here in the state. Well, that exposed a flaw in the Betsy program, and you wisely worked on that and fixed it so that we can keep those tax dollars here in Oregon. And that's the kind of thing that transparency can lead to. It can catch those things faster, because right now you have to do a public records request and pour through reports. I've done these requests, and sometimes it takes 2 months to get the information if you get the full information, and sometimes you get a barrier of a fee on receiving the information. The average citizen really can't come up with $300 to get information about a particular program. And we can do this without creating a whole bunch of new processes. I mean, we already have the state transparency website where this information could be hosted. And that website was created using existing resources. State agencies, for the most part, are collecting this information now as a matter of course, and they use it to do the analysis that you see in the tax expenditure report about how effective these programs are. And I would note that one of the programs, the Betsy program that's cited in this bill, the Department of Energy just last month started posting on their website information on who's been pre-certified for Betsy credits, how much they've been pre-certified for, what the project is for, and where they're located. And their plan is to include jobs data and other information later on, as soon as they, can. So it's being done within their existing budget as well. They've started the ball rolling on this. So in summary, House Bill 2825 is a good tool to ensure that Oregon's economic development programs operate as effectively as possible. It will reveal opportunities for improvement and provide real information on the return on investment that the public receives from these programs. It's just one more step forward in improving the accountability of state government programs that the legislature got going with House Bill 2500 in 2009. This bill will add sunlight to a currently opaque part of the budget.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Committee members. Did everyone have their coffee this morning?
Are you ordering?
Yeah, there's no question. Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Petty, please. Good morning. Please identify yourself, Mr. Petty. And
good morning, Co-Chair Wisnett and Co-Chair Holvey, members of the committee. My name is Dugan Petty. I serve as the state's chief information officer in the Department of Administrative Services. The bill is written, I think, is readily achievable. The intent of the bill is readily achievable and implementable. We have three areas of concern with the bill as written that we think could be addressed. The first area of concern is the bill does not call out the issues around confidentiality about the information. And we can tell you from implementing House Bill 2500 last year, one of the kind of the hidden difficulties with the bill was that some of the information in contracting was legitimately protected under ORS 192, and it took some doing to pull that out. We think that if the bill made it clear that it wasn't intending to cover confidential information that would be protected under 192, that would be helpful to the agencies going in on understanding what is covered and what isn't covered. It just makes it cleaner. Second issue has to do with Section 5 of the bill, which addresses not just, from my read of it at least, not just the area of the bill covering the tax expenditure reporting information that's asked for in the bill, but it requires all of the information on the site to be available in open source format. I believe last week or the week before we testified on a bill that was very similar to that, and there's no definition about this, so it's not clear what it means. I believe what the sponsors mean by this is that this information that's posted should be readily available in some kind of open format so that the data could be downloaded or used. We, in the written testimony, provide a definition that the federal government has used for their transparency site that clarifies that, and some clarification of that would be helpful. If I'm correct, that the assumption is just to make sure that the information posted is readily downloadable and readily consumable, we believe we do that already in the information that we provide. On top of that, we recently had the opportunity to make updates to the enhancements to the transparency site at no additional cost. We had and been piloting a program we call OregonData.gov that actually allows for information feeds from agencies to be posted and for the consumers of that information to come in and actually tabulate the data, to graph and chart that data, and with open APIs allowing developers actually to pull that down and do something with it beyond just having the data in only a readable format. Because we had that capability established to do this with some GIS reporting that we're trying to work through, we were able to take that feature and move it effectively into the transparency site. So right now, today, the information that's accessible on the HB 2500 transparency site has searchability capabilities beyond what we initially set it up to do. It has the ability for the user to tabulate that data and to graph it and to create views that they can come back to or others can use. Plus, with open APIs, developers could actually pull that information and do something with it. So we think we're covered right now in making this data readily available. If Section 5 remains, we would ask that there be a definition in there so that it's clear what that means. The third area of concern is simply that this bill creates a set of standards for the tax expenditure reporting that is established by the Transparency Commission through rulemaking. Now, that's okay. That's what the bill does. But the House Bill 2500 framework that currently exists has the Transparency Commission making rules for its operation and then makes recommendations to DAS for DAS to set standards for agencies to implement. So when it comes to the tax expenditure reporting, this will work a little different than the other. Not saying it's bad, it's just going to be a little different in how it works. And those rules that the Transparency Commission would set up for the tax expenditure reporting would then, of course, override what DAS would do. That would have the force and effect of that. So we would make adjustments to comport with that. But that's just a little bit different. So those are the three areas of concern. Again, the content, the agencies provide that content. We will post it up as we have on the other, and we think that that's readily doable. We would ask the sponsors to consider those three points.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions, committee members? Both Representative Smith and myself appreciate your past support on House Bill 2500 and your comments today. I think there's going to be some testimony that we may have to call you again to work on this, and the one item you brought up that we'll probably need some more amendments and look here. But based upon our experience, I'm sure that DAS and your office will do what they can to make this happen. So appreciate you.
Mr. Co-Chairman, absolutely.
Representative Hovey, do you have any comments?
No, I think you covered it. I was just hoping that you would work with us to make this a better bill, perhaps, and make it maybe so it's not so different from what you're doing currently, so it fits into the Transparency website a little bit better.
Co-Chair Hovey, be happy to do that, and I think it's very close. In fact, I think there may be an amendment in the offering that addresses at least one of these issues right now, from my understanding. So.
Thank you.
And Representative Sheehan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Section 5, I completely agree with you about the wording on everything. What would the purpose be of being able to download the information? If the information is up on the website, I'm trying to understand what purpose Section 5 has, or not Section 5, I guess subsection 5 of Section 1, to download the raw data. What application would that have?
Co-Chair Wisnes, Co-Chair Fogley, Representative Sheehan, I think you have a number of different users for transparency sites, is my understanding, and one of them simply might be the casual user that simply comes in, looks something up on the site, and leaves. Another one might be a more interested user, at least with the capability we currently have, that would come in and create some views on the site, save those views, and then come in and look at that periodically. So they might take this information, graph it against this information, tabulate it in some way, and then save that site and come in and use that periodically. The downloading part could be looked at in a couple of ways. One of the ways that people download it is if it's for example, a researcher doing heavy research where they'll put that into a database, aggregate that with some other information, and go back and work it frequently enough that it's worth the investment for them to do that. The other use for it that I'm really excited about, and we are just on the threshold of beginning to look at what we can do here, is the idea that application developers would come into the site, and now with this open API that we've created off of OregonData.gov and now embedded in the transparency site, an application developer could come in and take different data and put that into an application that others might use. The real pioneering work here was done a couple of years ago in Washington, D.C. with their data.gov site, and they had a contest for developers where they had sufficient data streams out there with these open APIs so that the developers could come in, look at this, and build applications that other people could use. And the best one that worked for them, right off the bat, pretty basic, pretty elementary, was they took their metro schedules and put it onto an iPhone application that allowed users to find out when the metro was coming through and what the schedule was. Pretty simple, pretty basic, but it was usable. The interesting part about this is that the public's use of this data and the kind of application that's meaningful and is going to be used goes beyond what I might think of, or we might say, well, that's a good application. And when you begin to put this up there, it begins to open up that kind of opportunity. So that's, I think, the third way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good. Co-Chair Hovey, did you have anything else on this? Okay. Mr. Nelson and Mr. Craven, you want to come up together? And Mr. Gallagher.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jim Craven from Jim Craven Consulting. Really just sharing some of my, as someone who's worked on the issue of tax expenditures and written on it and such, I have some comments about the structure of the bill that I thought I would share briefly with you today. I understand there are some amendments, though we don't have copies of them, so if my my comments are not in sync with the already amended version of the bill, then I apologize, but all I have to work with is the bill itself. A couple of key issues. There's a difference between a program such as Betsy, such as a number of other programs, where an applicant, a business, asks for something, goes through an application process, and is either accepted or rejected. So that's a grant, a program type of thing. One of my comments is on the inclusion of ORS 317-152 in the list of numbers you see. That's the Oregon Research and Development Tax Credit. That is more what you would call a line on a form subject to audit. There's no way that the use of that credit, which basically piggybacks on top of a similar federal credit, there's no way for that to be disclosed at the individual company basis without breaching tax confidentiality. So I think that does not belong in this bill. Whatever you all decide to do with the ultimate disposition of this, because the macro analysis of that credit is already included in the tax expenditure report, and you have those numbers, and we'll be chatting about that credit and many other credits as this session proceeds with the other processes that are going on in the building. But I don't see a way to include that citation. I've seen some amendments that say we won't put anything in there that breaches confidentiality. Well, if that's the case, then that should be excluded from the bill, because it just there's no way to go into somebody's tax to report on an individual company's use of that tax provision without breaching current statutes on tax confidentiality. So I wanted to bring that to your attention. I think the other ones maybe aren't quite in that category. That specific one, you don't ask for it. There's no agency that administers it. It's like a lot of other things on your individual tax return. You claim them, and you're subject to audit by the department. So that's an issue I wanted to bring up there. I think that I am not here testifying in opposition to transparency, but it is, I think, incumbent upon those of us in the building to, you know, to take the big picture and then go down to the individual sections and words and citations and sort of pick through them and provide information why something may or may not work. So that's the reason I come before you today. I do think that the bill as written is probably a quite enormous fiscal process to undertake. I have seen some amendments that say, well, this is just about putting stuff up that's already collected, that's already analyzed, that's in the possession, and we just want to put it on a website. That's a different debate from the printed bill before you today that sort of says all these different agencies need to do a new analysis and compare, quote, promise to actuals and opine on whether the company's met its measurements. That's a lot of work if it indeed is new work. If it's not new work, then I think we're having a different discussion. So those are the key issues I wanted to bring before you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that structurally this bill probably needs some work.
Thank you. Go ahead and have all three, Mr. Nelson or Mr. Gallagher, you want to?
Chair Wisnett, Chair Hovey, members of the committee, Tom Gallagher representing Portland Business Alliance. I have this bill out once I saw that it was scheduled. For our folks to look through those section citations in Section 1, Subsection 2, so I don't have all that back yet. For example, the R&D tax credit is something Jim does on a daily basis. We don't really have any general objection to taking the information that's currently collected that goes into agencies and transferring it over, putting it on the website. That seems smart. I don't have any problem with that. I don't know why they need a bill to do that. I think that DAS came up and testified to the extent that they like that idea and they have the capabilities of doing that, and that especially on the Betsy tax credits and other things, those things are already on individual agency websites. So there's no objection to moving that data that is not already excluded under public records law from disclosure, as Jim was talking about, moving that over onto the website. I think the bill goes a little further than that. I think it narrows in on certain code sections, and I do think the committee ought to take a look at that. If the public policy here is to get tax expenditures out, that's a good idea. If it's just the economic development tax expenditures, I'm not sure that doesn't have a double agenda to it that we deal with constantly in the Revenue Committee. And the reason I want to talk about that is in the Revenue Committee, when you come forward with a tax, working for a tax credit and for going through a certification process or whatever, these tax credits are sunsetted, they're reported in the tax expenditure report. That's where that debate takes place as to whether or not the promise and actual results are there. Having spent most of my life in this building following up on tax credits and having them sunsetted and so forth, that's a robust debate in which all the interest groups that care about it are involved. So the last thing I want to talk about is this, is just to give you some basic information on this whole idea of how these public websites are used. I've been in front of you and will be in front of you again on public records bills, and I'm very much in support of, you know, public notice and public information, et cetera. We like that from the newspaper point of view. What I want to say to you is we are finding, as we dig in deeper and deeper into the website and the internet concept, that it is not as easy as an issue as it looks. If you put it on the web, on the web, everybody will see it. I'll give you an example. We're doing some research on another bill right now. When you post a public notice in the newspaper, any one of the hundreds of public notices, the newspapers automatically put that on their website, on their public notice website. That public notice website last month, where anybody in the state can use it, anybody can go in there and pick out all the public notices are there, got 39,000 hits. Now, what are 39,000 hits? What I'm about to give you is a rough estimate because it's proprietary information. Oregon Live got, in the month of January, got over 2 million hits. So we're talking really here about public records and public notice and so forth, really niche audiences, special audiences. And the issue here on most of this data is that it is available already for people to get. I would agree with Mr. Bartholomew, and I look forward to him sitting up next to me on some of the public records bills, that it is difficult sometimes to pay the cost of reproduction and to get into the agencies, etc. Therefore, I think moving some of that data over to the transparency website makes a lot of sense. It's going to be easier for people to get and actually be cheaper for agencies. They won't have to go through and dig it out. So I would be happy both from the public side of it and from, you know, people who use these tax credit sites to sit down with the sponsors and with DAS and figure out what it is we actually need, what it is we're actually getting, and how we can do that as cheaply as possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Nelson?
Co-Chair Wisnett, Co-Chair Hovey, my name is Mark Nelson. I'm representing myself today, but I should point out that I do represent a number of business associations who do take part in a lot of these economic development programs, both Betsy's, Enterprise Zones, etc. I also participate in what's called the Oregon Committee, which is made up of about 40 different business associations and interest. This particular bill was discussed yesterday, and I'll try to give you a little bit of a gist of some of that discussion. I don't mean to infer that everyone on the Oregon Committee supports or opposes this particular legislation, but part of the concern, no one wants to be, as Jim said, against transparency. But part of the concern is that we have enormous problems we're facing here in terms of the economy and jobs and how to stimulate that. And anything that adds to the cost of business in this state and doesn't further really the economy and the development of jobs, we have some concerns about. I echo Mr. Gallagher's statement is most, a lot of this information supposedly is on existing sites. sites today, or could be put on existing sites today. We're very concerned about the words promised and actual results, which tend to indicate that somebody is doing something wrong, or what they've promised is not what they have delivered, and that there needs to be some kind of inquiry into these tax credits. As we've all gone through in the last 2-3 years, enormous effort by the revenue committees to look at tax credits. We're going through that same process as we speak today, and most of us here are participating in that process. And that, in our from our point of view, takes these tax credits, turns them upside down, goes to the agencies, and requires those agencies, as we did with the Betsy's, to look at what they're doing, what their administration is, to see if it's properly functioning. We have a concern about the overall cost of putting this together, if in fact it's nothing, it's something more than the actual posting of existing data that is already part of the agency's record. So both in terms of cost and what we're trying to get at is what causes our concern. We applaud Representative Thatcher and her work on transparency and her commitment to the economy and growing the economy and jobs. At the same time, we're not sure that this particular piece, if it does in fact go farther than just posting information that's already available, whether it's actually needed. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Committee members, questions? Representative Conger.
Thank you for your time.
Oh, wait, now we have a question.
Yeah, I waited until Tom got up.
Good idea.
I was just curious if, I mean, sometimes it seems like, you know, we need to legislate something that's already possible because it's not happening. And so there may be a need for that in this instance, or a use for it. And so perhaps it would be, are you looking at specific amendments to the bill that would address some of the concerns that you've raised?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Conger, the answer to your question is, I think if we were to sit down with DAS and with Mr. Bartholomew, we may find out exactly what can be done inside the existing structure. More of this stuff is being posted. It's not being posted in the same place on the transparency document. So that's number one. I think we don't need amendments until we figure that part out. Number two, what strikes me is the concept of saying that the government isn't doing what it's supposed to do, therefore we need another law, is a bit incongruous. We kind of need enforcement of what they're supposed to do, and that directive can come both through the Ways and Means process from this body, and it come from this committee. I've left many committees where we didn't end up with a piece of legislation, and we didn't end up with something in legislation. We had very clear direction as to what was supposed to happen, because the legislature will be meeting again very shortly, and they hate it when you don't do what you ask them to do.
Follow-up. So did I understand you say that the law would already require a lot of this information, or it's possible for it to be?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Conger, the way the public records law is written is that all, and we just had another bill in another committee, which they defined this, and they took out the term all writing, and they said all communications of public agencies are public records unless they are specifically exempted. So there, unless it's a trade secret type concept, which the representative of DAS was talking about, some of the pieces that are exempted, or as Jim is talking about, individual tax returns, all of this material is public record. Now, having said that, access to public records is a second issue. And I think that moving this public record on some particular issues that's already collected onto this website is just fine. I mean, I think it solves Mr. Bartholomew's problems, it solves the newspaper's problems when they go to look for this stuff. It's right there. But I will come back and say, I think that special audience usage, not just general public use, I'm going to ask you how many of your people, or I would actually say it this way, when somebody goes up to you and tells you they saw your picture on public television, you kind of look at them and wonder what they were doing that evening or up at 3 o'clock. It's just special audiences that follow this stuff. It's there if you want to find it. And a lot of people do find it, and it's there.
Mr. Chair, follow-up, Jim Craven, Representative Conger. I think if the bill, if the true intent of the bill is to say, we're not going to ask these busy, overburdened agencies to do a unique new analysis company by company of every one of these things. We're going to say, of stuff you already do under your current statute or whatever, aggregate it and post it. You know, that's one approach. The bill is printed, sort of presumes that multiple agencies will do a new, unique, company-by-company analysis, promise versus actual, and post that. So those are two real different approaches to this, and that's what needs to be worked out, I think.
Thank you. Just Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I heard who you guys were representing yourselves today. Are you representing newspaper publishers today?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Smith. No, I'm representing Portland Business Alliance.
Portland Business Alliance, thanks. Have the publishers taken a position on this?
I haven't sent this bill to the publishers. What I am giving you and the publishers I am certain would be very supportive of is both our interest in public records, our interest in transparency, and our interest in, you know, doing it efficiently and quickly.
Got it. Thanks.
Chair Hovey.
Thanks. I guess I'll go ahead and ask this. You expressed some concerns. I'm trying to hear what your concerns are about a part of the bill that may not be something that we already have data on. And that's what I'm hearing. I'm sort of going to the part in the bill that refers to the promised and actual results for the taxpayer. So are you saying that those results would be new data that's something that we don't already have? Or, I mean, I'm trying to understand your concern specifically about that.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, I would hope that in all of these programs, the agencies that are in charge of them already have some kind of system to be looking at whether things are complying with the law. I think part of our reaction on behalf of some of the business community was the phraseology, promise versus actual, sort of sounds like we're going to find out a bunch of, you know. We should, enterprise zone, there are metrics you have to make.
Mm-hmm.
County hiring, average county wage, those kinds of things. Those are, it's just partly the word promises. I mean, sort of metrics and performance against metrics is I think, really what maybe the proponents are getting at, and partly it's a reaction to language. So there should be metrics in these programs, and somebody ought to be looking at whether they're being met and such. One last comment. You all know this is the tax credit session, and there's tax credit bills as a result of what you did last session being examined by many different committees, and then there'll be a joint tax credit committee later on in the session. I think this bill has a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee.
Yeah.
This needs to be folded into that larger debate, I would think, because this session, a number of committees are looking at what should be the metrics for tax credits, how are we going to evaluate them, what are the promised and actual results. I would hope that whatever this comes out gets folded into that other debate so we're not going down two different tracks. I mean, maybe in that larger debate about tax credits, they'll endorse the idea of additional transparency, and these things can all come together before we adjourn.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair Hovey, put a point on that. I think we're all sitting here agreeing with posting this public information on the transparency website through DOS. I don't think it's expensive. I don't think it's hard to do. The language promise and actual results and an explanation of the agency's certificate decision will vary from different tax credit to tax credit. You're not looking at those individual tax credits. When you apply for a Betsy tax credit, you go through a certification process and you have to prove it up. And the agency is sitting there following up and looking at that. Others don't have that process to it. So that is an additional layer. If you somehow we're trying to put a certification-type process in here, a promised and deliverable-type thing that the public could then look at and say, and that really truly is the heart of the sunset review of tax credits, and I am totally in favor of that. As we look at the total my clients are totally in favor of that. It's not individual. As we look at the total revenue problems of the state of Oregon, tax credits need to come into play on that, because if you sit around and say tax credit for this business but raise taxes for all businesses, those are two things that split the business community pretty much too. So you asked a good question there in terms of, I think this bill can accomplish something very simply out of this committee, which doesn't get it into that tax credit debate and may not even need to go to revenue.
Representative Smith.
Thanks, Chair. It actually would be helpful, and I really appreciate what you just said, and not just credits, and Jim, you had said something about sort of expenditures overall and trying to get a handle on sort of what's our process for that, right? It's now 53 cents of every potential revenue dollar. In the early 90s, it was closer to 33 cents, right? It's the biggest undertold story, but that the biggest bulk of that is not your clients, tax credits, and so just be really clear about that. And I think we've had a lot of discussion today, and I don't want to prolong it, but would love to talk to you guys, sort of after hearing about both the transparent, either things through the bill or through the Transparency Commission, expenditures more broadly, not just the credits, and as well as sort of how to wrestle with this structurally, because I don't know the answer, and you guys might have some thoughts.
We're going to go now.
Thank you for your testimony, gentlemen. Yeah, that's right.
But do we have to reopen it then?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Close it.
No more testimony. We've already done 25 minutes.
There's no more.
Okay, we've got to close this one. Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2825. We were scheduled to, we've already had public testimony on House Bill 2550. There's no one else signed up for 2550. I do not plan to open another hearing unless someone in the audience wanted to testify on 2550. Do I see any? You did? Yeah. Okay, we'll open up public hearing on House Bill 2550.
Co-Chair Wisnett, Co-Chair Holby, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. And perhaps this is a mistake on my part, but if there are questions from the committee about the intent of the bill, I'd be happy to try to answer those.
Thank you very much. And
thank you.
Did you look at, the Department of Revenue look at the previous bill we heard?
At 2528?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir, we did.
But you didn't have any comment or testimony?
Mr. Chair, I did speak with one of the sponsors before the hearing and asked about the disclosure issues with the I had not also had a chance to look at the amendments.
Okay, thank you very much. I guess I'm probably out of order doing that, but I want to be sure and talk about it. As a question I had, I was going to ask. So, committee members, any questions for on 2550. Department of Revenue, no questions? But you're new, or do you have a position on the on the bill?
Mr. Co-Chair, the bill would expand a current program that exists now that allows us to offset state tax debt against federal tax refunds. This bill would address other types of debt and allow us also to enter into agreements with other states. So that's the purpose of the bill.
You are supportive of the bill?
We have no opposition to the bill.
One question.
Chair Hovey.
One question for you. I mean, this bill, as written, may have a fiscal impact and may have a revenue impact. Do you have any indication which one comes out on top?
Co-Chair Hovey, Co-Chair Wisnett, we would expect that the revenues from participating in these agreements would exceed any cost that we would incur in setting up the process.
Thank you. So it would be a net revenue gain, essentially.
Co-Chair Holby, I believe that's correct, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for stepping forth. And we'll close then the public hearing on House Bill 2550. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2552. And we have, want to bring up Mrs. Lancaster, please.
Okay.
Good morning and welcome,
morning.
And please identify yourself and present us your concise, informative testimony.
Chair Wisnant, yeah. Chair Holvey, and members of the committee. For the record, I am Diane Lancaster, the State Procurement Officer at the Department of Administrative Services. Today we're talking a little about House Bill 2552. We are certainly supportive of the policy issue. We want to make sure that people are contracting, that we're contracting with, have paid their taxes, are in compliance with Oregon law. We have some questions and concerns. They pretty much come down to two major areas. One is potential delay of contract awards due to the requirements of the bill as it is currently drafted, and then the procedures that we would need to follow in dealing with bidders or proposers who are not in compliance or for some, you know, that there's some issue with and how we would handle that. I've listed, I think, about half a dozen concerns and questions, and again, they are fairly technical. The bill as drafted is quite broad in the sense that it applies to all public contracts for state and local contracting agencies, possibly for any dollar amount. If that's accurate, then we're talking about what we believe would be a tremendous volume. And so that may be something to be looked at. I've spoken about the need to add some steps to the contract award process, and again, that is something that perhaps can be overcome with the technological pieces that we heard about earlier this morning. We are concerned there is an emergency clause and a 91-day implementation time frame for the bill. We think this might be a little aggressive because the Department of Administrative Services, yep. Department of Justice, and Department of Revenue are all going to have to work very closely together to make this come to be accurate and thorough and to make this process come together well. And then, as I spoke, it's not totally clear in this bill. The details are not there about what are we supposed to do if, you know, if we have a low bidder or a high-ranking proposer in line for award, you know, what are we supposed to do in that case, and what is the range of possibilities. I'm not an expert in tax law, but the bill as drafted speaks to personal or persons. We were not sure if that included businesses and corporations. And then finally, there is a piece that talks about the contracting agency's performance of the contract being conditioned on the truth of the representation of the person that we're contracting with. Again, we're going to need some little clarification on what does that mean and what agency actions would we need to take if we discover that someone has misrepresented the truth of their tax status, and we're in the middle of a contract with them. So, again, some details. I did take the liberty of providing the current requirements, and they may be far from sufficient in the committee's view, but I did think it would be helpful to at least say what we are doing now. To sum it up, non-resident bidders have to report any public contract award they receive valued over $10,000 to the Department of Revenue. And then before making final payment on a contract, the agencies are supposed to satisfy themselves that the non-resident bidder has complied with that requirement. And then finally, all bidders and proposers must supply certification with their bid submissions that they are in compliance. And, of course, that's a certification. It's not actually the checking with Department of Revenue that this bill then takes that one further step. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. It's very good information for us to have on the bill. It looks like it's going to need some work. So committee members, any questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Munster. Mike Ellison? ALC.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
Co-chairs Wisnant and Holvey. My name is Mike Elias. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. Ms. Lancaster has outlined really most of the concerns that our association saw with this bill. But really briefly, the fact that it's in ORS 279A, it would then apply to every contract, whether goods and services, public improvement. It could be a contract for reams of paper, could be a truckload of gravel, just about anything. And then across the board, all public agencies, so all special districts, counties, cities. And then to provide one day for Department of Revenue to get back with an answer, could definitely lead to delays. And then there's the question of what happens if there isn't an answer within one day. Do you go forward with the contract? What are the damages if there's an inadvertent mistake? So from our perspective, it probably raises more questions than it answers. So we think there's probably a lot of work that would need to be done with this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee members, questions? Representative Cameron?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it be, and without knowing all the details of this bill, sounds like there's some substantial complications with getting some things done that you need to get done very quickly and having to comply with this. In employment throughout the state, we have to supply new hire information to Department of Justice to see if there's back taxes owed or child support issues, and eventually maybe 2 weeks or a month later we get a notice as an employer to attach that person's wages mm-hmm. to pay those things back, but they are employed and they're working. Is there any resistance from the county to have something that comes after the fact that somebody's now under contract, but we have a contract that's going to be attached to recoup some of those back taxes?
Co-Chair Wisnant, Representative Cameron, that's an interesting idea, and I'm not sure that there would be a problem with that, but there is a question of, we'd have to look at that. If you could go forward with the contract and then get checked to see if there's compliance, that may be something that's doable.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Committee members, any other questions? Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Landau?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, Mark Landau, representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Our association represents some 950 special districts across the state of Oregon. I will not repeat what's been said previously. The special district shares many of the same concerns that have been articulated already. A couple of points. We, as an association, and certainly our members, support tax compliance. Nevertheless, we do have some concerns. A couple of the concerns, for example, is what if the Department of Revenue is incorrect in their assessment of the individual or corporation or proposer's compliance? It sets up an opportunity for bid protest, which obviously could result in significant delays to actual letting of a contract. Of course, then another question becomes, who's liable at that point? Because the contracting agency, local contracting agency, has been given incorrect information. To Representative Cameron's question, interesting point as well. The problem, of course, that your question poses for us is that we have under the bill, you are required to ensure that the proposer is in compliance, and so it's difficult for us to then go back and say, well, we're going to recoup your payments, pay them to the state, when they should have been in compliance in the first place. It's an interesting way to get at compliance, but it would be after the fact, because the bill states that a proposer has to be in compliance before you can actually sign the contract. One potential way to thread the needle on this, it would be simply to apply this to the state and see whether or not this actually works, and then apply it to local governments at some later date. I represent some 950 districts. There are some 197 school districts, 260 some odd cities, obviously 36 counties, and so on. This is a pretty heavy workload for the Department of Revenue. And I might just suggest that one approach would be, let's work the kinks out and then apply it to other local governments. I'd be happy to answer any questions
that you
may have.
Thank you very much. Committee members? Representative Cameron?
Yeah, I understand your point there, and my point was we'd have to change the whole concept of the bill. The fact is that there's already a system out there. We deal with it as employers every day. It's a pain in the butt, by the way, because I become people's bankers and I don't get compensated for that. But you would become the banker, or the special district would become the banker, but I think there may be a real simple way to do this, is it's just notify the Department of Revenue that you have a contract with such and such a person or such a company. It's the Department of Revenue's responsibility or the Department of Justice to do their background research and say, hey, we're going to attach this contract. I mean, they do it to small employers. It would be a very simple concept. It allows you to go through with the contract. It's not your responsibility to verify whether that person's in compliance with the tax laws or not. It's somebody else's responsibility.
I think we need a bill.
Well, it's not coming from me.
our preference, co-chair Wisnik, co-chair Holvey, Representative Cameron, obviously isn't to become the tax collector for the state of Oregon.
It's not mine either, but I am.
Indeed. We would prefer to provide the services that we're providing. Again, though, we obviously do not oppose tax compliance in the state of Oregon. Obviously, we're very reliant on property taxes, utility fees, whatnot. So I certainly understand the points that you're making.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kovo, you wanted to speak on this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Co-Chair Wisnik, Co-Chair Holvey, and members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba, here this morning representing the American Council of Engineering Companies of Oregon. We have about 110 member firms and about 3,000 employees across the state, and we work on a daily basis with our state and local government clients. And I'm here to express some concerns. I was very pleased to see Ms. Lancaster's comments. And if I can also say, I don't know of any of our members that aren't in full compliance with the tax laws of the state of Oregon. But we see this bill as a barrier to entry, potentially, for our firms that are interested in pursuing contracts with the state or local governments, especially potentially small emerging firms, women and minority-owned firms. It sets up a process to collect the information and to verify the information provided is indeed true and correct, and the unintended consequences potentially could be significant, as the rules and the details to implement the bill, of course, won't be written until after it is passes. In the bill, the fact that a taxpayer has due and outstanding taxes does not make them guilty of anything, nor does it suggest that they won't be paying their taxes in full or on time. To take this to the extreme, if no respondent to an RFP or an RFQ were deemed qualified because of an outstanding tax bill, not an illegal tax bill or a tax bill that they never intended to pay, but an outstanding tax bill that may have a payment schedule worked out with the governmental agency of interest, then the only option would be for the agency to do that work in-house, and which oftentimes is a good option, but for some reason they were going out to the contracting world, or potentially to hire a firm from out of state, which has never done work in the state of Oregon and therefore would never have a tax liability with the state of Oregon. From our perspective, these potentially could be solutions to a problem searching for a standard of 100% compliance that is not really attainable in tax compliance anywhere that we know of. Another way to say it, I think if the policy issue here is capturing 100% of every dollar owed to the state of Oregon from anyone who's doing work for the state of Oregon, then if we amended this to include all governmental employees in the state of Oregon before they were able to receive a tax, their paycheck, they would need to represent and warrant, as it says in here, represent and warrant that they have paid all taxes due state and local governments and are otherwise compliant with the taxes of the state. So we just see that potentially there's some problems here for us as contractors with the state. I think that the concerns of the counties and DAS were also to our point, and we would encourage further work on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Committee members, I'd like to compliment you for bringing the perspective of the private business community before this committee on this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Hope, do you have any closing on this bill?
No, I think we've heard.
Okay, we'll close up the public hearing on House Bill 2552. We'll open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3501. 3105, excuse me. And Representative Cannon, thank you for waiting. I didn't mean to make you wait that long.
Not at all, Mr. Co-Chair. Members of the committee, I'm State Representative Ben Cannon, House District 46. One of the strange and wonderful things about this process is that very large and important bills and very small and rather insignificant ones all begin in the same way in a hearing room like this. This bill is a small bill. It is really a housekeeping bill related just to the functions of our lives and our offices here in the Legislative Assembly. This bill would change the default for the reports that are submitted to us by agencies and the notices of rulemaking that are submitted to members of the Legislative Assembly. Change the default for the distribution of those from paper copy to electronic copy. So where the statute has currently specifies that agencies must deliver those in writing, they would, if under the passage of this bill, be required to distribute those by electronic format. The number of legislators who have signed on as co-sponsors of this bill, I think, suggests the level of interest, or at least the level of interest of your staff members who may have signed your name without you knowing it.
Oh,
no, I would not. I'm sure they would not do that, but I think that there is a breadth and depth here of interest from members of the Assembly in organizing our lives a little bit more electronically, saving a bit of paper in the process. The Capitol recycled, I say recycled, I think that's a good thing, but recycled 41 tons of paper in 2010 just here in the Capitol, and that was as we were moving to a paperless system for much of our work. So I'd encourage your support and hope we can move this bill along.
Thank you very much for your clear and concise presentation, testimony. Committee members?
President Clinton. Mr. Chair, would you have any issue if I requested this bill be moved over to the Forestry Committee, where some of our members have feelings about paper and timber towns and stuff?
I would suggest that this committee send this bill directly onto the floor.
Oh, okay.
Any other? Chair Hulley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cannon, thank you for bringing this bill forward. It's been something I've been hearing about from my staff for many years every time we receive a paper about rulemaking, and wondering why we keep continuing to do that. I think this is a good way to save the state some money, actually, and appreciate you bringing it forward.
Thank you, Representative Holby.
Any other questions? Representative Conklin.
My notes here, I had, and I'm not sure this is right, Representative Cannon, but it prohibits members from opting out of the electronic submission and asking for paper.
Thank you, Representative Conger, for your question, Mr. Co-Chair. Representative Conger, yeah, so we had some questions about how this bill was drafted, and so we were in touch with Dexter Johnson in LC, who did the drafting, to clarify that point. It is our intention that legislators would still be able to request from an agency on a case-by-case basis a paper copy if an electronic copy was insufficient. And LC has confirmed that that would be possible. The legislator could make the request. Technically, it appears the agency would not be absolutely technically required to provide a paper copy. However, it is LC's, and I'll read from his response, which I'd be happy to submit to the record as well. It says, as a practical matter, I think an agency would fulfill a legislator's request, particularly on a case-by-case basis, for a paper copy of a report. So, you know, the view, the point here is to change the default. The agency satisfies its requirements under law by sending an electronic copy. However, legislators may request, I think would be, some legislators might be quite likely to request a particular report in writing, and an agency may
That's
provide it.
Clear, and it may not request. Thank you. Any other questions, committee members?
Just on that point, I think we should get a copy of that for our records as well. You know, because I think all of us have a little bit of concern that statement maybe needs clarified. Perhaps I'm not positive, because I would think that legislators would feel like if they needed a paper copy or wanted one, that they'd be able to get one.
Thank you, Representative Holmey. Mr. Co-Chair, I would be happy, as I said, to submit Dexter's comments for the record, his response to our questions. I want to point out that page 4, where this language appears, does refer just to the rulemaking notices, subsection 15, or the rulemaking notices that agencies are required to provide to some legislators, depending on their committee assignments or leadership positions. And so this provision that I think looks on the face of it perhaps objectionable or at least worrisome relates not to the executive summaries of reports, which I think are the bulk of what we receive, but just to the rulemaking notices. Again, I'll be happy to submit Dexter's comments. You can take a look at that, decide whether an amendment.
DAS is going to testify too, so maybe they can.
Okay, they might be able to clarify. Yeah. And you know, we can be happy to consider an amendment if that language proves troublesome to members of the committee.
Thank you very much, Representative.
Can I point out something?
Yes.
I also want to point out in Section 1, the executive summary is only a 1 or 2 page document. So you're not talking about reports that could be a 50-page document that are being sent electronically and couldn't be received in paper form. It's only a 1 or 2 page document that members could print out.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Thank you for that clarification. Any other questions, Representative Cannon, members? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For bringing it to us and your testimony.
I appreciate you hearing it.
Okay.
Fine work.
Mrs. Taylor? Good morning.
Good morning.
Please state your name and give us your clear and concise testimony.
Co-Chair Wisna, Co-Chair Holvey, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marjorie Taylor. I'm a senior policy advisor with the Department of Administrative Services, and I just wanted to express our appreciation for House Bill 3105 and the clear direction that it gives agencies with regard to providing all of the legislature with notices on rulemaking and executive summaries for reports. I checked in with a number of large agencies about whether they currently comply or are willing to comply with this, and we are already willing and able to do this. Some agencies are already doing that. And with regard to Representative Conger's question, absolutely, in the event that we receive a request from a legislator for a paper copy, I'm sure that any agency would be willing to comply, whether it's for rulemaking or an executive summary or a full report. So again, we're happy that this bill is here, and it's very clear, and we'll be happy to communicate the directions to all agencies.
Thank you very much. Questions, committee members?
That last point, is that, again, case by case, or can I just blanket say I want paper?
Co-Chair Wisnack, Co-Chair Holvey, and Representative Clem, at this point, I understand that this bill was drafted with that language so that we wouldn't create an opt-in, opt-out sort of situation, but hopefully on a case-by-case basis you would make that request.
Another question. Chair Holvey.
I just thought I'd point out, you know, I mean, one of the things about the, you know, whether or not we could get paper, you're sending it to us electronically, and we, most of us have printers in our offices as well, so it seems like it'd be pretty easy, quite frankly, for a legislator to, he's worried about his budget, you know, but our agencies have budgets as well, so it seems like it'd be pretty easy for us to print something out if we really wanted it.
Any
just a comment.
Questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you want to do a work session move?
I'm comfortable.
It's consent.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay. We'll close the public hearing on the House Bill 3105. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3105.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3105 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Chair Hovey. Chair Hovey moves House Bill 3105 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Comments, discussion, committee members? Okay. Representative Cannon, would you like to carry that?
Can we help?
Yeah, we got to vote. Yeah, okay. My figure's going to pass. Okay. Would you please have a roll call, please?
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Clem?
Nope.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
315.
Co-Chair
Wisdom? Aye. So with the vote, the motion carries. And Representative Cannon, you'll carry the bill to the floor. Thank you very much.
Representative Clem should carry it.
I look forward to the debate.
Clem, you fill out a minority report?
Deep minority. Okay. Well, with that, we have to close the work session on 3105. Yes. We're going to close the work session on House Bill 3105.
See how many.
We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2487. Okay. Thank you. You want to do a summary? Sure.
Of course.
Our administrator will give us a summary of the
House Bill 2487. It requires counties with a population of 100,000 or more to establish a tax supervising and conservation commission, or to require each municipality within the county to submit a financial summary to the county. It allows a county with a population fewer than 100,000 to establish a commission with approval from a majority of voters, and a county with a population exceeding 100,000 to establish the commission with approval from a majority of the members of its governing body.
Thank you very much. Former Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak to this briefly.
Go ahead. March, because that okay, comes up.
Committee members, I guess I'll introduce myself as well, since I'm not down in front. State Representative Paul Holby from District 8. We had an interim committee hearing on this bill in December. Some of you may have been at that, and many of you may not have. And as we looked at this bill, and certainly I know many municipalities and counties have concerns over this, but as we looked at this bill, it was more of talking about transparency and also having transparency of our local governments. And it's my understanding that this bill, though it allows counties to establish a tax supervising and conservation commission, which perhaps Steve March will be able to explain to us a little bit about what that is. It's sort of an either-or situation, and the or part of it is that instead of creating this type of commission, they can simply put the financial summaries of the municipalities on their website for voters to be able to look at those financial summaries, just as a transparency of local government as well as what we're doing at the state level. So there may be differing points of view about exactly that, and so I'm interested in hearing, you know, the points of views of the counties on this as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Hovey. And Representative March, welcome back to your home.
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Wisnett and Co-Chair Hovey. It's a pleasure to be here. For the record, my name is Steve March. I'm the elected Multnomah County Auditor, although my talk here today or testimony here today is not the official position of the county. They have not taken a position on this bill per se. But I'm speaking as a consumer of the information provided by the Tax Supervising Conservation Commission as an auditor and as a former policymaker. In 1991, I went to work for the auditor's office, and we used the information that was provided by the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission reports because they pulled together multiple jurisdictions. We have almost 40 different reporting districts within the county of Multnomah. And to pull all of the budget information and the debt information together in one source was of great value, particularly in looking as whether or not some operations were operating efficiently or not. And frankly, I can find out faster on Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission's website what the county's debt policy or debt is, particularly looking at the interest rates, looking at how much is outstanding, and I can pull together what our debt to equity ratio is much faster than if looking at the county's own reports. So there's a lot of value added in their information. You have my written testimony. I didn't want to just read that. So that was just an example of what I found. I did testify during the interim on the concepts in this bill, and at that time I hadn't looked at the reporting that was going on another county's website about the various districts within it, and that information is I went to look at it. Some of it was not accessible because I didn't have the latest version of Adobe Reader. I have only version 9, and there some of those reports were up to 10. So I'm thinking the average citizen out there who goes on the website and tries to get that information is also going to have some problem and have to download software. So I would urge that any county that has the wherewithal to implement a Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission use that mechanism, in that the summary reports available on our neighboring county's website were not anywhere near to the detail. I could find out how much debt was outstanding, but I did not know, I couldn't find out what the interest rates were, what it was for. So the information, there's a lot of value added in the information provided by the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission. With that, I'll take any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Committee members? Chair Hovey.
Thanks, Mr. March. Just going back to the website and the financial summaries, and so I'm hearing you say that may not be enough.
It is a very high level look. I mean, I'll put it this way. It's better.
Please turn off your cell phone.
I think the chair's going to owe us a beer.
What's your ringtone, man?
That's very angry.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Somebody's playing a joke.
Rage Against the Machine.
That's thrash metal.
And for a co-chair to do that, I'm appalled.
Yeah. So am I.
So, co-chair Holby, the website that just provides the summary information is better than not having that available, where you'd have to go to multiple different district sites, and most of them probably don't have it posted. So it is a value to have it together in one spot. But there's added value to have the additional analysis that's been done by the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission. And for the County of Multnomah, the current budget for that is under $280,000, and it's now shared by all of the jurisdictions. So certainly some of the larger jurisdictions would have the wherewithal to work this out.
Sorry for the interruption in your testimony.
Two beers.
Let me know when that's happening. I'll turn that.
So follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
As I'm trying to concentrate here. Do you have an idea of what it costs a county to put something up on a website like this? I mean, just the summaries?
No, I have not inquired as to the cost of an individual county. Given that website, Mr. Co-Chair, given that websites are pretty prevalent now on virtually every.
Yes.
I'm here.
Major. That was so awesome.
Would you like me to take that with you?
Yeah.
Turn it off. I have a six-pack.
That's what I just did, is turn it off. So,
so Mr. Co-Chair, I don't know what to call that.
Oh. Okay, back to some formality here. Any other questions for Mr. March, Representative?
I love new phones.
You're out of order.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. March, thanks for your testimony today, and thanks for dealing with the frequent interruptions. My question is, we're not planning on moving this bill today, correct, Mr. Chair?
Hearing.
Okay. I have not talked to the city of Gresham yet, but we have in our file a letter from City Eugene expressing some concerns about perhaps a duplicative service and whether or not they already comply with the budget process. They're concerned about that. Do you have anything to say about what that might be in terms of resources on the other end of this for their compliance as well?
Thank you, co-chairs and Representative Matthews. The Multnomah County's done it, I believe, and there's probably additional testimony, but since the 1920s, and the just bringing the information and data together from the various jurisdictions isn't that much of a burden. I mean, every jurisdiction already complies with the basics of the public budgeting law. So most of this information is available. It's if you've looked at your own consolidated annual financial report for the city of Gresham, it is a pretty good sized document. The one for the county is about this thick. So the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission folks will look at that information. They will look at the budgets, and our budget is a two-volume document. The Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission pulls that information together into one report. So it's not really additional burden upon the jurisdictions themselves.
I appreciate the answer, and thanks, Mr. Chair. I'll still be looking into it with my region, but thank you for addressing it.
Any other questions, committee members? Chair Hovey, do you have any questions?
No, I think I've
thank you.
Electronically
asked thank you.
Enough.
Good to see you again, and thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr.
I think I'll have Mr. Ellison and Mr. Linhouse. Please, Linhouse, please come up together. And we have the revenue, Mr. Phillips. Why don't you just come set up in case we have questions? Thank you. You don't have to. Either one, please identify yourself. Turn your cell phones off.
Finally got it.
Especially.
Sorry. What if we want to hear their ringtones, yeah, though?
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, my name is Tom Linhares. I'm the Executive Director of the Multnomah County Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission, TSCC for short. The commissions were first adopted by the 1919 legislature. The first commission that was actually active wasn't until 1921. And the statutes dealing with our responsibilities and our authority and our scope have changed considerably and numerous times since then, obviously. I was doing some research on a completely different subject just yesterday, or Tuesday, and I came across the 1935 statewide ballot measure, which would have required all 36 counties to have a tax supervising and conservation commission. It failed at the polls, but we've been around a long time. What I wanted to do today is, since the commission does not have an official position on House Bill 2487, I simply wanted to give you a better idea of what it is the Multnomah County Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission does. You have my one-page little cheat sheet, so I won't go into that in too much more detail. The value that we add really is in three areas. First of all, we provide technical assistance to all the taxing districts in the county in terms of local budget law and property tax issues. This is similar to what the Department of Revenue does. The difference is we have two budget analysts in my office, well, myself and a budget analyst, and we serve 40 taxing districts from the county, six cities, seven school districts, two community colleges, the ESD, water districts, fire districts, a total of 40. Two of us handle that. If a district has a question, a problem, they can call us. We'll go out and sit down with them and discuss an issue. If the city of Troutdale hires a new finance manager and he's not familiar with Oregon's local budget law, we'll go out to Troutdale, sit down with them, and explain the process and help them any way we can. The Department of Revenue does a similar function for all the taxing districts in the state. The difference is there is two of us helping 40 districts. Department of Revenue has three analysts dealing with the other 1,300 taxing districts. So our service, no offense to the Department of Revenue, but is a little more personal, a little more direct, and I think we provide a very valuable service for the districts in Multnomah County. Department of Revenue is great, and if one of my districts calls them, Department of Revenue will give them every assistance they can, but there's just the economy of scale says that we can provide a little bit more direct service. We do a manual, we provide local budget law training, very, very valuable for the taxing districts. The other thing that we do, which is different than anybody else, is we review the budgets of the districts under our jurisdiction. We get the budgets before they're adopted. There are three stages in the budget process: the proposed, the approved, and the adopted. We actually get a copy of the approved budget and review it carefully before it's adopted. So if we have any recommendations or objections to the budget, we can make those before the district adopts their budget. Now, make no mistake, our advice, our work is advisory only. We can't tell a district how to spend their money. But if we can see something, they're transferring money from one fund to the other and they're not balancing, or something else is wrong, we can point that out to them before they adopt the budget, so the adopted budget is a little bit more accurate. We do hold public hearings on, for those districts with a population exceeding 200,000, we actually hold the public hearing on the budget rather than the governing body. So for the county, City of Portland, Portland Development Commission, Portland and Mount Hood Community Colleges, we actually conduct a public hearing, Port of Portland, TriMet Metro. So that's another thing that we do, and that is distinct from the county assessor, the Department of Revenue, or the district's own independent auditor, which really get information after the fact. We're the only agency that reviews budgets other than the citizens and the budget committee of the district. We're the only outside independent agency that looks at budgets before they're adopted. So that's a unique characteristic of what we do. And as Mr. March said, the third very vital thing that we do is we compile an annual report. We get the adopted budgets, we get debt information, we get property tax data from the county assessor, not just in Multnomah County, but the adjoining counties for those joint districts like PCC that covers five counties. We compile property tax information from all five counties and put it in our annual report. So that if somebody wanted to compare the budget for City of Portland with the City of Fairview, they could look at our annual report, and the budget numbers, even though they're vastly different, would all be in the exact same format. If they wanted to review the budgets of Reynolds School District versus Gresham Barlow School District, again, all those budget numbers are in the exact same format, so they can compare side by side what those two different jurisdictions are spending. The debt information, the property tax information, so, and our annual report is distributed to policymakers, legislators, the districts, the media, and private citizens. I once had a private citizen call me and said, I called Portland Development Commission to get some information on how much urban renewal taxes they've been collecting, and they told me to call you. And I was able to answer the question because we compile that information in a nice, concise format. So that's a little bit about what we do. There's five commissioners appointed by the governor, so we're actually independent from the county. The county is one of the jurisdictions we oversee. And so we provide a valuable service for not only the taxing districts, but also the citizens in Multnomah County. In our annual report, that information isn't available in that extent in any other county in the state.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Ellison.
Co-chairs Wisnett and Holvey, Mike Eliason with the Association of Oregon Counties. We don't dispute the value that the Multnomah Tax Supervising Commission provides. I think it's a great service, and Mr. Linares does a great job. I've spoken. There's about seven counties under the way this bill is written, seven counties that would be affected. They would be Lynn, Douglas, Lane, Marion, Deschutes, Jackson, and Clackamas. And so basically, this bill, as written, provides two options, as Co-Chair Holvey, I think, has already outlined. One would be to form a tax supervising commission. In speaking to those counties, they do think the cost would be prohibitive to do that. For Multnomah County, for example, I think they, I think actually statute caps the amount of cost at $280,000 right now, if I'm correct. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It was 280. We got legislation passed in 2009, which increases that 3% a year starting 2011-12.
And previously, that was just all general fund out of Multnomah County. Now, I believe it's split. 50% of it can be reimbursed by the other taxing districts, so the school districts, the cities, special districts. But for the counties that would be affected by this, they're either very dependent on county timber payments that are going away or at least severely being ramped down, or they have their own budget crisis for whatever, you know, whatever the reason. So there's not a lot of interest probably in going that direction. That the second option, posting the budget summaries of all the taxing districts, certainly that would be less burdensome. However, for example, Clackamas County has 129 different taxing districts within the county. So there is still a not insignificant cost in tracking that, all of those down, making sure they're all there, getting them formatted every year, putting them up on a website, and doing them, updating them every year. It's certainly not the same cost as a forming a tax supervising commission, but there's a lot of work involved. And at a time when a lot of the counties are cutting core services, cutting down to the bone in sheriff patrols, juvenile services, and the like, these are already actually public records, and they're intended to be available upon request already. One alternative would be potentially to have each district turn a copy in to, say, that the county treasurer's office and have them compiled there and available for inspection upon request. But we're not sure that requiring these counties to maintain a website for all taxing districts is probably the way to go right now. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee members? Chair Holvey.
Thanks. I appreciate the Department of Revenue being here. So it's my understanding that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that these summaries from taxing districts are already formatted in electronic form and submitted to the Department of Revenue. Is that true?
Chairs Wisnett and Holvey, and members of the committee, my name is John Phillips with the Oregon Department of Revenue. The answer to that question is no. 294.386 that requires the districts, all the 1,400 districts, to provide a financial summary of their budget is one part of a series of requirements that they publish in the newspaper prior to the meeting of their governing body. We do not get that. It's published in the newspaper. We do design and provide the form electronically to the local governments, so they do have that.
Follow up? So there is no requirement for taxing districts to, I mean, it's already public record and it's on an electronic form, I assume, already. Maybe the counties can answer that question. I don't know.
Chair Wisnett, Co-Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Tom Linhares again. Some districts have it electronic in electronic format. Some of the smaller districts wouldn't. The financial summary, the form that Mr. Phillips was talking about, is available in electronic format in an Excel spreadsheet, essentially. The districts can download and fill out. Some of the smaller districts simply print it out and write it out by hand and give that to the newspaper to be published. So it's a combination of some are in electronic format, some are not.
Mr. Chair. Yes, co-chairs. This is John Phillips again. In the past, and I'm thinking early 90s and prior, all of the local governments were required to send us their adopted budget at the end of their adoption period, which is June 30th. And so we housed a complete wall of budgets. We would hold them for a year by law, and then we would forward them to the Secretary of State's Municipal Audits Division, and they would house them. And our staff was reduced, and our oversight was limited, and actual time to process and review all the budgets was not possible. And so at some point, there was legislation, I think in the early 90s, that said we should be allowed to ask for a budget of any local government so that we can inspect it if there's a complaint from a citizen, but that we not be required to, that the local governments not be required to send it to us. So I think that's been an efficient move. Our role is a little bit different than Tom's as a TSCC. We write rules about it. We oversee the Local Budget Law Act, and the Local Budget Law Act really has three purposes. One, to notify the public of what's going on with local government budgets. Two, to sort of force include them in the process by making budget committee members be people from the community. And three, to process budgets in Oregon all in a uniform fashion. So regardless of where you are, you know that your county budget is prepared exactly the same way as your city budget, as your special district budget. So those three things are really important. Our role and responsibilities are limited. There's a statute that prohibits us from being involved in any way in influencing the fiscal policy of the local government. So we step back. We just look at the process, and we also are required to issue declaratory rulings on any issue that comes to us. If someone were to say, Department of Revenue, did this local government perform this function in this process according to the Local Budget Law Act? And then we would issue a ruling on that. We also do selective reviews and send out letters to local governments and say, you didn't do this, you need to do this next year. Where we really have a sort of, force, is where we are a screen into the property tax system such that levies are not, the levies from permanent rates and local options aren't getting onto the tax roll and billed to citizens without being lawfully adopted and approved. So if you have a local government with a permanent rate, and then for some reason they try to classify that as under the wrong category in a Measure 5, or they're trying to certify a rate that's higher than their constitutional rate, we act as a screening house for those kinds of things. So we don't compile data from budgets and present them to the public as Tom does, but we do have oversight.
Co-chairs Wisnett and Holby, if I might add one thing, we do all have a strong interest in transparency in the budget process. We worked, and you may see this bill later in the session in your committee, we worked all year throughout the interim, both the Department of Revenue and Tom and Special District School Boards, League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon Counties, the newspaper publishers, to try to revamp what's published, the budget summary that's published, to make it more transparent to the public, to change how it's structured so that it's more readable and more understandable. So the interest is there. We are working on this.
Thank you very much for your testimony, gentlemen. Any other questions? Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on the technical assistance and public hearings, I'm just trying to understand the value and who's asking these questions. How many people last year, how many questions came from citizens, and how many questions came from taxing districts that you were able to help out?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Representative Sheehan, we conducted, I think it was 10 public hearings last year on budgets. One piece, Portland Community College adopts a biennial budget, so they didn't go through the budget process last year.
How many people show up to those public hearings?
Quite honestly, very few. But the point is if the governing body conducts a public hearing, chances are there's nobody that shows up either. What we do is the five commissioners appointed by the governor, they act as citizens. So I guess you could say at each one of those hearings there were at least five citizens, those being...
Were there at least five or were there just five?
There were a few more here and there. TriMet always seems to have a few people that want to testify or ask questions about bus service and that kind of thing. But the reality is not too many citizens show up for budget committee hearings. Whether the governing body conducts a public hearing or whether the Tax Supervisory and Conservation Commission conducts a public hearing, very few people show up. What we do is we provide at least five citizens, the commissioners, who are there asking really pointed questions of the district about their financial policies, about the projects they're undergoing for the next year, and particularly for us being in the metropolitan area and having things so interrelated. We'll ask the same question of three or four different jurisdictions, and it's interesting how we get different answers from the county, metro, TriMet, City of Portland on a transportation project, for example. So, but the reality is not too many citizens show up for public hearings. We also hold public hearings on any property tax measure, general obligation bond or local option levy. And again, the commissioners are asking questions of that district. Why do you need the money? What are you going to spend the money on? What are you going to do if the measure doesn't pass? Those sorts of questions. In reality, few, if any, citizens show up for those public hearings either.
So back to the original question about the just technical assistance and answering questions throughout the year from citizens and taxing districts. How many, outside of the realm of a public hearing, how many questions from citizens do you get, and how many questions from special districts do you get?
I would, co-chairs, members of the committee, Representative Sheehan. We compile that information. We have little logs that we keep because our commissioners
just
want.
Just a rough estimate.
I'd say we probably get 250 to 300 calls, emails from taxing districts with technical questions, and those are the people who are putting the budgets together primarily, not the elected officials or the administrative, but the budget people.
Over the course of the year, 250 calls and emails.
Citizens, we probably get 50, and then we probably get another 30 from media. Okay. With questions and kind of background information on the property tax system or budgets, that sort of thing. So, right. Off the top of my head, those are the numbers.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. Committee, we're okay. Thank you very much for your testimony and for coming forth today. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2487. Committee members, we want to introduce committee measures. I'll open a work session to introduce committee measures.
Mr. Chair, I move that LC 283 dated 2/11/2011 be introduced as a committee bill.
Chair Hovey moves that LC 283 dated 2/11/2011. Be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, just confirmation.
Yes, I'll make. Thank you.
It binds us to vote for it.
No.
Oh.
Committee members, a reminder that by moving this as a committee bill does not indicate your support or that you would vote for the bill.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. Is there any opposition to introducing this as a committee bill? If not, I'll close the work session. Bill's introduced. Committee members, good meeting. Adjourn. You may now turn on your cell phone.